Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today I'm joined by Matt Smith. He has a YouTube channel called Spark Spread, and he's been doing analysis on Tesla Energy and Tesla Full Self Driving. And also, he has a prolific Twitter account as well. So I wanted to welcome you, Matt, on the channel.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great talking with you. I've watched almost all your videos, and I wanted to do a two-part kind of interview with you. The first part, I wanted to talk about your 20 or so Cybertruck reservations that you have on hold and your thoughts on Tesla Full Self Driving. And then in part two, which will be another interview, I want to get your thoughts on Tesla Energy, kind of what is the potential of Tesla Energy going forward. But first, on this whole Cybertruck Full Self Driving thing, like the rumor has it is that you have a bunch of Tesla Cybertruck reservations. Is that true? Like, how many do you have?
Yeah, so that is true. I have 21 Cybertruck reservations. And it really kind of goes back to Autonomy Day when, you know, Elon was really laying down the foundation for what he described as robo-taxis. And at the time, like, almost nobody believed him. And, you know, I was thinking, oh, this is, it's kind of a binary event. It's either, you know, going to happen and they'll solve autonomy and robo-taxis will become a reality, or it won't. But I actually reserved a Model Y shortly after that. Kind of in the mindset of, hey, if it does work out, then the Model Y will be worth a lot more down the road. That was a $2,500 reservation. So then in November of 2019, when Tesla came out with the Cybertruck for a $100 reservation where you could lock in the price of full self-driving, you know, I've got kind of a background in finance. And so to me, I saw this as like a free call option on this binary event of autonomy. So that was kind of how I thought about it. And then as price increases, you know, for full self-driving happened over time, I added a couple more reservations. So yeah, now I'm sitting at 21.
Amazing. So Cybertruck reservations, were they always at $100? I think they were, right? From the beginning?
I think so. Yep.
Yeah. So was full self-driving, was it $8,000 before when you first reserved Cybertruck, or was it still $10,000?
I think it was like $7,000 for the first couple. Okay. And then I got quite a few more at that $8,000 price point before they raised it to $10,000.
Okay. And then do you have any at $10,000?
I don't know. I haven't reserved any more at the $10,000 price.
Got it. So you're in at the $7,000, $8,000 price for full self-driving.
Yeah,
I noticed. I was just on the Cybertruck page a couple days ago, and it clearly says, like, you know, lock in your full self-driving price right now, you know, with this reservation. So it's very clear that Tesla is giving you an option to really lock in that price right now, you know, for whenever Cybertruck is delivered. It's pretty interesting, huh? I mean, was that kind of something that stuck out for you? Like, you're like, oh, I could lock in this price.
Yeah, it was, you know, initially it actually kind of annoyed me because like as a shareholder, I was like, why are they, you know, allowing people to lock in this price? It seemed like a kind of a suboptimal pricing strategy for them to essentially give away a free pricing strategy, a free option on autonomy. I like you read through all the fine print. I read the, you know, reservation agreement just to kind of make sure that I was understanding everything correctly. But then over time, you know, they never changed the $100 reservation price. You know, you can still to this day lock in your full self-driving price. And I know that Tesla is kind of aware of this issue. They actually cited a couple of my tweets in some of their legal documents that were kind of referencing this. So I know they're kind of aware that people are doing this. But I think as I've been trying to make sense of it, I think they're trying to get people ready to be fleet operators. So it would be in Tesla's interest to kind of, direct Cybertrucks to those people who will put them in the network and have them highly utilized, you know, the most number of miles possible so that, you know, Tesla's getting a share of those, you know, the platform fees. So that's kind of how my thinking has evolved, that, you know, Tesla is not being stupid about this. They actually realize that this is going to be a big new industry, and they're trying to prepare people to go down that path.
Uh-huh. So for each of these Cybertruck, are you really planning to take delivery on all 21 of these Cybertrucks, or are you kind of like wait and see?
It's a little bit wait and see, but, you know, I think the optimal plan would be, take delivery. So I think the initial strategy would be probably take, you know, one or two to kind of test it out, make sure that, you know, it works, that, you know, people aren't just freaked out and you know, nobody would take them. So kind of make sure that the unit economics makes sense before committing, a lot of money to a big endeavor. But then my thinking is, if it works kind of the way that I'm expecting that it should and will work, then yeah, take full delivery. To have 21, you'd need like some sort of, big piece of land and things like that. So, I've got some thoughts on kind of what would be needed for the infrastructure for, a fleet operator. So given that a lot of thought.
Do you have any like land scoped out to store your 21 Cybertrucks?
So I have looked. So I live relatively close to Detroit Metro Airport. And so kind of what I was thinking is, there's always I've taken Ubers and Lyfts to and from that airport quite a bit, and there's always a flood of people in there. So my thinking is, some piece of land that's relatively close to there, and that would be kind of the primary focal point to kind of try this out. I think I'm not quite to the point yet where, I'm ready to, it wouldn't make sense to, buy any land right now or anything like that. So I've kind of looked at pricing to get kind of, indicative amounts. It's a relatively large capital outlay to do this sort of thing.
Yeah. So what are your expectations in terms of like how much money you can make per Cybertruck? I'm sure the first maybe year or so it might be, smaller, but like, do you foresee like a time 3 or 4 years down the road where each Cybertruck is going to be making X amount of money for you?
Yeah. So, I've done the math, and I do think it's going to be a little bit of, I think there's going to be this weird interim period where you can undercut Uber and Lyft at like $1.50 a mile, but your variable pricing on the Cybertruck is like, 15 cents, 17 cents, somewhere in that neighborhood. So, I think the cash flows during the next couple of years, like for the early adopters, will be really good. But then I think it's legitimate that, if you look at the market size for, Uber and Lyft, it is relatively limited. So I think when you start looking at the long term, I think you need to assume lower pricing. But I've done some kind of envelope math on what are the initial periods look like. And I'm coming up with like somewhere between $15,000 and $25,000 of free cash flow per vehicle. So
per year,
per year. Yeah. So, over, 21 vehicles or so, it's a pretty quick payback period, and seems like a pretty nice little, side business to kind of run.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a 2017 Model 3, a December build, and like, I'm wanting to upgrade, but then it's like such a great vehicle because it's like, it's got the full self-driving hardware. It's all ready, for the robotaxi network. I'm thinking, hey, maybe I should just keep it around, definitely.
So kind of keep it and use that one as like the utilitarian, robotaxi.
Yeah.
And yourself upgrade to a different vehicle.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I'm tempted by this whole robotaxi, fleet idea. I mean, Elon has mentioned it before as a serious possibility. Are you concerned at all with all of the complications? Like, for example, insurance. Do you think Tesla insurance is going to cover all of your vehicles, and will you be liability free, you think?
Elon has said that the liability essentially has to be with Tesla, and I kind of agree with that. There's probably going to be some insurance costs. So if Tesla's going to take the liability, I don't think you just simply don't pay any insurance. I think the fleet operators will have to pay some insurance, but in terms of the broad liability, or if it just whenever a crash inevitably happens, I think it kind of naturally would fall on Tesla to handle those claims.
How about like people messing up your cars? I mean, like spilling stuff, eating crackers, spilling like coffee and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, do you think that you'll get alerted somehow? Will the car notify you, or how will you find out? Will you have to check every day at the end of the day to make sure all your cars are in decent condition? Is this going to turn into like kind of a business, like a, I don't want to say a full-time, but like a part-time job where you're going out to your cars every day and checking on them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've seen some people provide commentary that, like Tesla's going to do everything, and it's going to be more economical for Tesla to handle everything, so there won't even be a role for fleet operators. And fleet operators. I just don't think that makes sense. This is a very kind of tactile business, I think. I mean, as you mentioned, there's going to be people that, you know, are just, you know, taking this for, you know, to avoid drunk driving and, you know, might even, you know, throw up in the back seat or whatever, and it's gonna be gross and you got to clean that out. And, you know, you're going to need to kind of take care of these vehicles. You're going to need to clean them on a regular basis. I mean, if they're highly utilized doing say 90,000 miles a year, I mean, you're going to need to do like washing the cars on a very regular basis and probably like detailing them even, you know, once or twice a year, maybe even more frequently than that. So I do kind of envision, you know, almost like the piece of land that I'm looking at buying, thinking, okay, you need a lot of charging infrastructure, probably need some, you know, like area to wash the cars. And I do think you'll need, you know, like an attendant of some sort to, you know, physically plug the cars back in, because, you know, we don't have snake chargers yet. That's not a reality. And you know, you're going to need to kind of clean them out. I mean, people are going to, you know, leave food wrappers and whatever, and in some cases there'll be kind of, you know, more serious damage that needs attention. So to me, I think that's a lot of the value that fleet operators can provide, that and kind of being geographically spaced. I think it'd be hard for Tesla to kind of own this entire process like globally or nationwide. I think that's just, that'd be stretching them very thin. And I think, you know, it's the sort of business that lends itself to kind of small entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I mean, would you imagine that Tesla kind of focuses more on the more lucrative, like metro areas, and then leaves the less desirable places, the less dense areas to just Tesla owners who will let their, you know, cars, lend their cars to Tesla network?
I think so. Obviously it kind of remains to be seen how this will all play out. You know, as an investor, I kind of think about it as, Tesla's going to be able to put some vehicles into their own fleet, and that will help them to kind of maximize output of their factories. So, you know, they won't have to worry necessarily, at least in the next, you know, 5-10 years, about, you know, overcapacity, because any extra vehicles they can, you know, just use themselves, put them into a network, expand into a different geography, and kind of operate them themselves. So to me, that's kind of how I think about it. The exact specifics of, you know, will Tesla do more urban areas or more rural? I'm not sure exactly how that's going to pan out, but it seems like it would make sense for them to focus on like a couple like very high volume areas and maybe, you know, take advantage of some scale that they could have there. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, like, with their balance sheet, they could do a fleet of like 1,000 vehicles in an area relatively quickly, that, you know, it would be very hard to get that many fleet operators to invest, you know, tens of millions of dollars to kind of get that business off the ground. But Tesla could, you know, do that relatively easily.
Yeah. So I've got a funny story. Like, you're talking about how, you know, it's kind of like a loophole, this $100 Cybertruck reservation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you think, like, you know, Tesla is like, maybe, I mean, knows what they're doing. On the other side, here's a kind of a different angle. So this is several years ago. I was at some Tesla event, and there was the head of the referral program there. And I think it was at the Model 3 reveal. Yeah, back in like 2016. And I remember, like, I had some suggestions to this guy, because they weren't replying to emails, and there was some, you know, it's just like backlogged, and there were just a lot of improvements that needed to be done with the referral program. So, mm-hmm. You know, they're all excited at this event because they're delivering the first Model 3s. And then I talked to the guy in charge of the referral program, and I go, "Hey, I've got these ideas for you. You gotta, like, you know, X, Y, and Z or whatever." And he's like, "Hey, like, you know, I'm the only one working on this entire program." And he says, like, "I'm bogged down. Like, I have no way to keep up, you know, I'm just like barely surviving." And I'm like, "What? Are you serious? You're the only one? Like, can't they get another person on?" You know, and he's like, "No, it's like, I'm just stuck with it." Right. And the funny thing is, after that, they had the whole Roadster referral program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where people got like a ton of Roadsters. But I think it was actually like, oversight on Tesla's part. Like, they just kind of, they don't have enough people on the right program, on the right stuff. So you have like one person on the entire referral program, and they're not really updating, they're not really, you know, really like looking at the details day to day, like as with a team or something. So my hunch is the Cybertruck referral or the Cybertruck order thing is kind of a slight oversight. It's just, they're just so busy working on so many other things. And it's just like, you know, it's just there right now, you know, and who knows, maybe after this video, after a couple of weeks, they'll close the loophole.
It could be, but you know, I thought about this a little bit. To me, it seemed striking that like the Model Y, which was introduced in the same year, 2019, you could reserve that for $2,500. So to me, it seemed like an active choice to, you know, drop that down to 100. But even still, I mean, it's been, you know, a year and a half since it's been introduced, and they still haven't changed that. And presumably they have over 1 million orders. You know, I've seen some of those trackers out there that kind of suggesting that Elon has said, you know, they've got way more orders than they could reasonably deliver. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it is just a loophole. I don't really know, but it's odd. And to me, it at least it like presents an amazing opportunity. You know, like it's very little downside.
No, I think it's definitely an interesting opportunity. After this interview, I might actually reserve 10 or 20 Cybertrucks myself. It's just because I've been thinking about it, actually, you know, I'm like, like it's $100 and it's like, it's great. Because it really is a call option, you know, where you don't have to take delivery, but you're locked into that price of $10,000. And there is a risk where Tesla later on says, hey, like you have to take delivery now, like, you know, immediately or whenever, or else you'll lose your reservation. But then there's always a chance that they let the reservation slide for a couple of years, you know, so you can actually test it out, wait to see this kind of, you know, roll out. And then like, if it makes sense, you just, you know, put in the order for $10,000 full self-driving when it's actually 20 or 30,000 or even more, you know, at that time.
Yeah. So to me, there's a bunch of different scenarios of how this could pan out. But like the downside is so limited. Like the absolute worst case scenario is that, you know, Tesla goes bankrupt and you lose your $100. But that's like, you know, unlikely, highly unlikely.
Yeah.
So then really your only downside is just the time value of money on your, you know, $100 or like however long it takes.
It's a refundable reservation, right? The $100?
Yeah, it's completely refundable. So like for whatever reason, you just decide you don't want it. You get the whole $100 back. I mean, it's like one of the most ridiculous call options I've ever seen out there in the real world. It's like completely low risk with just gigantic upside. Things like this should not exist.
So the question is like, why only 21 then?
Yeah, so a couple of people have asked me this. To me, like you start, I've spoken to a couple people that have like 500.
What? And are you serious?
They have
500 reservations?
Yeah, yeah. and like people,
wait, not more, people that, not like, just one, but me. Like a couple of people with.
Yeah, two people that have 500, a lot more that have, you know, like dozens.
Wow.
And I'm like, man, I wish I could get a referral program for this idea. Yeah, but so like, I think at a certain point, you know, it kind of comes down to, you know, lifestyle, at least for me. So, you know, you could do, you know, 500 and, you know, you need tens of millions of dollars in the business. So there's like a, you know, legitimate question of like, where's that capital going to come from? And then you're probably starting to introduce partners into the business at that point. And you're going to have multiple, you know, full-time employees. And it's like a very real full-time job, you know, with just big time commitments. I stopped at 21 just because, you know, that seems like a good amount of vehicles where it's, you know, it's a good business, provides a, you know, a good living if it all pans out kind of the way I'm thinking that it will. But it would still give me some flexibility to do other things or to, you know, pursue whatever else I have going on in life. So I just didn't want it to be like a corporation kind of big scale. You know, to me, 21
exactly.
is for an individual to handle.
Yeah. I mean, that's my personal concern. It's just like, it becomes a whole business to focus on and to run. And, you know,
and there certainly still will be some of that, even, you know, with, you know, 20, but I think it's just going to be a lot different if, you know, going from 21 to 200, that's a big step change in I think time commitment and you know, everything you need.
Charging. Have you thought about charging? Will you possibly use the supercharger network? Do you think Tesla network will allow that, or will you have to have your separate charging setup?
Yeah, so maybe this is kind of where some of my background in energy comes in. So, you know, the charging, even at like, you know, reasonable industrial rates, you're still looking at around 10 cents a kilowatt hour. But if you use solar and you do like a levelized cost of energy for solar, even in a, it's actually snowing right here in Michigan right now. So not the best, you know, solar resource around where I am. But even I've done some math and I can get that cost down to around 2.8 cents per kilowatt hour just by using solar. So, you know, as I'm thinking about, okay, I need to buy land anyway. Why not just add solar? So then you got higher fixed costs up front or higher capital costs up front. But then your marginal costs are essentially zero, and you've got the lowest possible rate for your energy. I mean, the lowest cost, you know, like lowest possible levelized cost for your energy. So you're essentially taking the utility rates and you know, dropping them by a half, two thirds. If you're in, you know, California or you're in Texas, the math would be even better for you there. But to me, you know, trying to maximize the cash flows of the business, I'm thinking, okay, it makes sense to invest a little bit more upfront, put some solar, buy a little bit larger piece of land, put in solar, put in some storage, and do most of your fleet charging through there. And I think that'd be good for branding too. You know, people can feel good about, you know, taking robo-taxi rides on Powered by Sunlight or whatever. You can kind of fold that piece of it in as well.
Yeah, but then you've got this extra capital expenditure at the beginning to plan for it.
Yeah.
So that's
the downside. But then then you go from, you know, variable cost of like 17 cents per kilowatt hour to maybe, I forget the exact math on it, but, you know, much less than that. I mean, then you're really only talking about, you know, maintenance, tires, that sort of thing.
Yeah. If you have any leftover energy, you could use it to mine crypto as well.
Yeah, I thought that a lot, actually. I think that's kind of the future. Yeah, maybe we can get into that in a bit, but like, I really think the future is like overbuild of renewable resources, especially solar, with some storage, and then like what I call dispatchable load. So you can, you know, flip a switch to turn on any excess energy at a marginal cost of zero, essentially, and put that to some economic use, whether it's, you know, compute power for, you know, mining Bitcoin or whatever, or Doge, since that's going to the moon, apparently, whatever. But
did you catch that tweet by Elon that he literally will take a Dogecoin to the moon?
He put that April 1st. I'm like, I think he's joking, but I also don't think he's joking.
Exactly. I guess he's going to print out or something, make a Dogecoin.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Or like, maybe he'll put a little computer on the moon that's powered by solar, and he's like mining Doge on the moon. Like, so what is a literal Dogecoin that you could literally put on the moon? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
A couple of days ago, I was camping this campsite, and I saw this dog walk by. I'm like, I've seen that dog. Like, what is that dog? I'm looking at my wife. I'm like, what is that dog? And then it hits me. I'm like, Dogecoin dog. And it's literally the dog of the Dogecoin. And I was like, flabbergasted, but anyways, yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying about, you know, the potential of energy, extra energy. I'm curious, on full self-driving, when do you think this thing is going to roll out? Like, do you have any ideas on the timeline in terms of, like, when are the first robo-taxis going to roll? So some specific questions on this, like, do you think it's a federal regulatory issue where the actual like NHTSA or federal government needs to chime in and say it's okay or not okay? Or do you think it'll be left up to the states to just decide? And then if there are huge problems, they'll escalate to the federal authorities.
It does seem to be a little bit of a gray area, you know, at least in the United States. You know, I think just last week it was, Florida came out and said, you know, within certain parameters, they're going to allow level four, level five vehicles to operate without a driver. So that's like a very clear, you know, allowable regulation within Florida. You know, Chandler, Arizona has, you know, something similar, you know, but I think there's a lot of other places where there just aren't rules on the books. So can Tesla just start operating them and kind of see what happens? I think they can. I think to some extent they're already doing that with some of the full self-driving capabilities, where sure there's a driver, and you know, all the liability today is with the driver, but you know, I think they're kind of operating in you know, some regulatory frameworks that weren't necessarily established specifically to allow Tesla to do the things that they're doing. So I think that's kind of the way that it is right now. And I wouldn't be surprised if some states are a little bit more, you know, open to this and kind of encourage it. But there might be others that, you know, the first sign of some red flag, they, you know, tighten the restrictions or, you know, outright ban them. So I do think it's going to be gray, and I think it's going to kind of vary place by place.
Mm-hmm. Do you think 2022 Tesla will be able to roll out some robotaxis in real life?
It's really hard to say. On the one hand, I think yes, like the rate of improvement is, you know, so dramatic. You know, I've seen a lot of the stuff that James Doma has been saying here, and you know, Karpathy and Elon has been super bullish on it as well. And to me, it kind of makes sense that, you know, you're making these, you know, exponential gains in the functionality of the software. And that's, you know, how machine learning works. That's how, you know, neural nets work. So it wouldn't surprise me that, you know, you've got drastic increases in capability in, you know, 4 months, 6 months, and then maybe robotaxis is already in 12 months. You know, I did get to kind of see the beta program for myself. I took a ride with Dirty Tesla back in January, Chris from Dirty Tesla back in January. And, you know, it's obviously an earlier build, but like one thing that has me thinking a little bit about timeline is like it basically doesn't function on snow right now. It doesn't kind of accelerate more slowly and brake earlier, just the way that you have to on snow. That's not like an insurmountable challenge, but in thinking about timing, I'm like, okay, maybe you need to get through one more winter, you know, where you've got all that extra kind of snow driving data. You know, granted, there will be some people in the southern hemisphere that can get you that data, but you know, I think as I'm thinking about it, I think, you know, maybe like this time next year might be the earliest I would reasonably expect.
Mm-hmm. In some of your models, I think for full self-driving, you've kind of modeled an expectation of starting at like a $200 a month monthly subscription fee for full self-driving, and mm-hmm. eventually making its way up to $500 a month. Kind of what's your rationale or thinking on like starting at $200 and then working your way up to $500 a month?
Yeah, so I believe if I remember the math exactly right, I modeled it as like a 20% premium on the 5-year amortization of the full self-driving cost. So my expectation, I think, is that, you know, Tesla's going to, when it gets clear that your vehicle will be able to, you know, make cash flow for you, you know, then I think they'll be able to increase the price of full self-driving. I think I assume that goes up to $25,000 as a purchase option. And so then the subscription option would kind of just follow that same, you know, two and a half times increase from where we are today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it. How do you see full self-driving take rate being affected this year? Do you think as full self-driving proves itself, as beta rolls out, that more people will opt in for this full self-driving option? And do you think in response, Tesla will raise the price again, like in the next couple quarters?
Yeah, I think so. But this has been one of the things that's been very hard to kind of get a grasp on. And Tesla really has not provided a lot of the, you know, details behind this. So like right now, I'm assuming we're at something like 15%, 18% in Q1. That's what I've modeled. Cause you know, the take rate in China is like 1%. It's incredibly low. And I think ever since the $10,000 price was, you know, introduced, it does seem that has, you know, affected take rate a little bit. We don't have perfect data around this just cause Tesla doesn't disclose it, but to me that kind of makes sense. It's someone like me who's been following this so closely, I'm like, I don't understand why the take rate isn't already like, you know, 45%, because this is such a huge deal and you can lock in the price right now. And Plus, it's just so much fun to drive. I mean, I got my Model Y in January, and you know, I've been using full self-driving, and it's just like amazing how good of a job it does.
Do you have the beta, or do you just use autopilot?
No, I don't.
You have autopilot. Okay.
But like even on city streets, I was taking this like curving road the other day, and it was like handling all of that beautifully and stopping for traffic and everything. It's like this is like really impressive technology. But I think a lot of people don't view it that way. You know, a lot of people just think that, you know, a $10,000 software option, that's crazy. Like, why would I get that? Especially if autopilot's free. The unclear thing to me is how quickly will consumers be educated? And even if, you know, people believe in the technology, I think it's going to take some time maybe for people to kind of come around to the idea of changing their car from personal ownership to, you know, like a business, or, you know, something that they'd be comfortable lending out to others. I think it will happen, but I think it's going to be a little bit gradual. So, you know, I do think Tesla is going to continue to increase prices. Wouldn't surprise me if we see that in Q2, you know, whenever the new beta release goes out. I think take rates will increase. I mean, they'll have to. Like, if this is as good as, you know, it seems like it is going to be, there's no way the take rates can kind of stay sub 20%. That's just like, that wouldn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting stuff. I want to ask you about modeling kind of robotaxi more longer term, 5 or 10 years down the road. How do you see like this total addressable market? Like, because, you know, we can look at, for example, total miles driven in the world, and, you know, it seems to be 10 trillion miles. It could go up to 15 trillion miles, depending on who you're talking with. Do you think with autonomous driving, the total addressable miles or the total miles driven in the world will increase a lot, or do you think it'll stay relatively the same?
So maybe two parts to that. First is, if more people are using robo-taxis in general, so essentially you're cutting into kind of like Uber and Lyft territory, and people are maybe not, some percentage of people, you know, forego car ownership to, you know, take robo-taxis. I think that does increase the miles driven, because, you know, the robo-taxi doesn't start, you know, at the same point of, you know, start that the user is going to have. So you have to, in other words, you have to drive to the user. So there's going to be, you know, some amount of empty miles that the robo-taxi drives itself. But it will be at a much lower cost than, you know, the cost of internal combustion engine miles. Then as the cost continues to go down, and, you know, let's say you're getting sub 55 cents a mile, you know, which is the cost to drive an ICE mile. And on top of that, you've got a better user experience where, okay, it's cheaper for me to have a robo-taxi, but on top of that, I can do work, or I can watch Netflix or play a game, and, you know, or listen to a podcast, like whatever, but I don't have to be focused on the road. That's like a much more attractive, I think, you know, ride than many people are used to having, you know, just when driving themselves somewhere. So I do think there's some elasticity of the overall, you know, miles, but that said, I don't think it's going to be drastic. So I don't think you, like, you know, 2x total driven miles, or at least certainly total, you know, like revenue miles, billable miles, just because it's more convenient and lower cost. People aren't going to need to, you know, travel twice as much. So, you know, maybe the overall pie expands a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be drastic necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think because ARK Invest, Brett Winton, the director of research, is saying something about, he thinks the total miles driven will triple with autonomous driving, just because he thinks people will drive a lot more, or will utilize mm-hmm. transport a lot more if it's cheaper. And so mm-hmm. I've been thinking about that. And in some ways I could see like the side, maybe, you know, people just get around because they need to get around where they're gonna get around. But then there's another side, is there could be a section where there are new use cases of transport, like kids, mm-hmm. you know, transporting, or for example, mm-hmm. I want to wake up tomorrow morning in the Grand Canyon, you know, so sleep in my whatever autonomous camper van, and I'm at the Grand Canyon tomorrow morning. I mean, it depends on how big those new use cases are, you know, like how much will cheaper autonomous driving open up new use cases where it's beyond just current transport uses. I think that's kind of maybe a question to ponder.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then I think the other piece of the you know, total miles driven would be, you know, for some percentage of the population. I mean, there are people on the lower end of the income spectrum that will restrict travel because of, you know, gas money. And so I think depending on at 55 cents, you maybe don't break too much into that market. But maybe if you can get down to, you know, 25 cents, then people will, you know, those users will, you know, increase the amount of transport that they're using. So it's the whole FSD thing is completely uncharted. Like I've thrown out models. I know you threw out a model and you kind of open yourself up to criticism by doing that. But like, it's just such a large opportunity to me. You kind of have to take a crack at, you know, valuing it. What are your assumptions and put it out there. And of course they'll be wrong, but I do think that the general trends seem pretty clear, at least to me.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me because it's such a new area, a new market, a new product being driven by a robot. And the market size and the use cases are still yet to be defined. So you have a ton of assumptions and even the rollout is undefined. Everything is so undefined.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is all upon the ultimate assumption that this thing actually works, you know?
Right. Which is a huge assumption, right?
Like, yeah, there's so much.
I'm not saying that this will happen. You know, yeah, it's just like there's a certain probability that it will. And I think that's not worth zero.
Yeah.
So
I hear you. It's been a great first part to our conversation. And I'm very seriously thinking about reserving some Cybertrucks after our talk, before I think they close the loopholes, which I think they will soon. That's my guess.
Yeah, before you post this video, make sure you get those reservations.
Exactly. In our part two of this conversation, I want to dive into Tesla energy, trying to understand the various parts of it, how to value it. And I'm going to ask Matt whether or not he agrees with ARK Invest's decision to leave out Tesla Energy in their recent price target. I'll also link to Matt's YouTube channel and his Twitter account in the video description. So we'll see you guys in the next episode. Thanks.